This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, an organization devoted to producing and distributing Reformed theological content for a connected age, online at reformedforum.org. This is the Reformed Media Review, episode number 35. Today we speak about a new church plant in Houston, Texas, denominational websites, and Reformation art. Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. This is episode number 35, and my name is Camden Busey. I'm very pleased to welcome today Jonathan Brack, who is admissions counselor at Westminster Theological Seminary in Glenside, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, what's going on, Camden?
Not much. We're also very pleased to welcome for the first time Andrew Moody, who is minister in the OPC, the Presbytery of the Southwest. He's joining us today to talk about all sorts of different things. Welcome, Andrew. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, today we've got Jonathan on, and he had just gone to church camp with Andrew Moody, and Andrew is somebody we're familiar with, whose work we know and whose ministry we've been aware of. And Andrew's kind of a jack of all trades, or he's got his fingers in all sorts of different things. So Jonathan thought it'd be a good idea to have him on to talk about all sorts of different stuff. Jonathan, what do we have lined up for today?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about what Andrew's been doing for a few years now, just because it's a part of media, and I thought it'd be great for a Reformed Media Review, because it actually is Reformed media in the sense of a media that we haven't talked about yet, which is art. Mm-hmm. And Andrew has a website called Reformation Art, and on the website you can get different snapshots of highlighted reformers, mm-hmm, that most of us know very well, and he does some work on them, and he produces them so that you can have, you know, a portrait or a large poster. I have two of Andrew's posters from Reformation Art, and they're really cool, and I want everything on his website, but my wife would not allow me to have a house that just has all these pictures everywhere. But nevertheless, it's really cool, and I thought it'd be a great topic for us to cover.
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, oftentimes we're looking for nice things to hang up in our office or in our house or in our study, and it's hard to find good Reformed art. I live in a real historic part of Philadelphia, or at least close to it, Chestnut Hill, and there's a print shop down the street, and it's really slick, and you can find all these old prints of historic American figures and even world leaders and stuff, but they had a couple of Jonathan Edwards in there, and I had to dig for like an hour to find some. But generally speaking, it's just hard to come across some of this stuff. And right. So you've got a nice place here at reformationart.com that you can go, and you can browse all sorts of different prints, posters, and like Jonathan said, other things you could frame of, you name it, anybody that is of interest to a Reformed person. And you have it all categorized here by region. I click on America, and you've got Francis McAmee, Archibald Alexandria, B.B. Warfield, Charles Hodge, a bunch of Van Til, Voss. I mean, this is really slick and really valuable.
I appreciate it. It started just as a personal hobby when I was in seminary. I did my first 2 years of seminary out at Westminster, California, and my last 2 years, Westminster's, WTS Philly's Dallas campus. But when I was in California, the library had study carols all around the edge of the library, and every student would line up at the beginning of the semester to claim a study carol.
Right.
So they could actually reserve one, and it would be their carol. They could leave all their books there throughout the semester. And a lot of the upperclassmen would try to decorate their carols with pictures of pastors, theologians, reformers that would inspire them. And us underclassmen would always be looking for those, you know, well, where can I get a portrait of John Calvin, or, you know, where do you find these things? And basically, you know, nowhere. I mean, there was nowhere I could find anything. So I started, you know, looking around, doing a little digging. I have my wife and I both are photographers. And so we have a background with Photoshop and imaging and scanning and all those kind of things. And so I started, you know, trying to really look for antique prints, primarily, you know, not only because they're, you know, most of the folks we look up to are old and dead and gone, which is, you know, part of it, but also because there's no copyright issues.
They're old enough. They've passed into the public domain.
Exactly. So, yeah. You know, I find things that are over 100 years old and I don't have to worry about the legality of reprinting them, reproducing them, everything that goes along with that. The stuff that's a little more recent gets a little bit more difficult. You know, like J. Gresham Machen, of course, he's a little bit more recent, but kind of on the borderline of copyright, depending on when the photographer died.
Yeah.
That took the picture, and you don't know who the photographer is. So, you know, those kind of things get a little interesting. But so I just started, you know, a few at a time here and there, and then making copies for my friends. And then eventually decided, well, I'll make a website. And so that, you know, there's got to be seminary students in other parts of the country that want these too. So I'll make a little website and see what happens. And then it just kind of grew from there. I had a few prints here and there as I have time. I think right now there's a little over 250 on there.
Yeah, I'm looking. There's a whole bunch. If you want a print of Savonarola, you can get one here.
Right. And he's a little, you know,
cool shot, too.
Questionable figure. You know, he is
kind of like the crew of on Philosophy for Theologians.
Yes, very questionable.
So that's great. So what are some of your most popular sellers here on reformationart.com?
Well, I mean, recently, of course, we had the Calvin 500 celebration.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so we did a lot of things for that. My wife and I made some special collages for that of Calvin, and trying to incorporate a lot of the different portraits we have of him into a big collage. So on the Switzerland page, you'll find all the Calvin stuff there because he's Geneva, of course. But let's see. Ecolampadius, big seller.
Really?
No, not really. Actually, I think I've sold one portrait of Ecolampadius.
Is it to Diane Poitras?
It was to Diane Poitras.
Really?
You're exactly right.
Bingo. Do I get some bonus points for this? Wow.
Sole scholar that we can name of Ecolampadius.
Right. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. So, Andrew, what would you say for the general? Well, you're taking old prints. You're trying to repristinate them or bring them into a new age and doing some retouching and some Photoshop work. So you're kind of blending the old and the new. What would you say for the current state of Reformed art, or is there such a thing? Is that even out there?
It's out there. There are some very, very gifted artists out there that are, you know, Reformed individuals. One of the ruling elders that was at the church in Amarillo moved out to Santa Fe this last year. He's a professional artist, Mike Mahon. And he's involved in an OPC church plant now in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. But he's a very well-known painter, paints beautiful landscapes, kind of a Southwest style. Mm. But, you know, talking with him about art was a lot of fun because to be a Reformed artist just means you paint a Christian worldview. You know, you're painting creation as you see it, informed by what Scripture tells us about who we are and about the world we live in. So it doesn't mean that, like is so often assumed because of, you know, the stuff that we have in Christian bookstores or so-called Christian bookstores, is that if you're a Christian artist, you have to paint churches and Bibles and
those.
It's the kind of problem Francisco Goya had, I think. I mean, he was kind of outcast by the church at the time during the Inquisition because he painted some scenes that didn't have religious subject matter.
Right.
But
right. You know, we're really free to, I mean, to paint whatever we want within reason. But I think also doing it with excellence, and that's another part of being a Christian artist in that sense, is doing everything to God's glory. Mm. So if I'm going to paint, I'm not just going to paint some junk. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not, you know, do, you know, all the reader response, modern art stuff,
yeah,
where you just kind of scribble stuff on a canvas and just say, oh, it's beautiful. What does it mean to you?
Neon airbrushed pictures of Maui on velvet.
Exactly. Exactly. It was like, no, I mean, we got, you know, if we're going to do something, we need to do it well. And because otherwise we're wasting our time and we're not honoring God.
That's a good point. Jonathan, we've had you, me and Jared Oliphant have had discussions on aesthetics and trying to get our minds around, you know, a Christian understanding of art and beauty. Philosophically speaking, isn't this such a difficult subject to talk about?
Yeah, it really is, because it's for one reason, it's really been untouched at a sort of academic level by the Reformed community. It really is tough, and especially not just talking about beauty and creation, of course, stuff like that. There's a plethora of that, but talking about the role of aesthetics and philosophy and a Christian commenting on that, mm-hmm. It's really just lacking. Andrew mentioned Mike Mahon earlier, and I remember having conversations with Mike, and he was real clear on the role of art in a Christian worldview. And one thing he did mention was the fact that art, throughout the history of art, what you have is art is a sort of priest to the king, or a servant to the king of whatever's ruling. So you have, you know, sculptures of Caesar, you know, so the art praises Caesar. And then in the medieval times, you know, art praises the church. But then what you have coming into the modern age is you have art itself taking on a role of the king. And so it's us, the creators of art, become the servants. Hmm. And so it's like, here's art, and it's out there and up here. And what is it, like we mentioned earlier, reader response, what does it mean to you? Yeah. You know, and so it's like, it's sort of untouched and by itself, and now we have to serve it. And Mike talked about how that's, you know, a reaction of autonomy, and art. So very interesting conversation, but nothing real academic throughout the years of aesthetics and philosophy and a Christian worldview.
Right. Roman Catholics have touched a lot of this. I think of men like Hansers von Balthasar and others. A lot of people have tried to develop what is called a theological aesthetic. But it's interesting to think about how our worldview or how our philosophy will impact not only how we do art, but even what we might do. I think of, for example, the classical period, and you think of all the sculpture that was made in ancient Greece and how it represented a Platonic philosophy of the form world, where mm-hmm. it seemed like they, you know, the sculptures of David, for instance, all these other figures were picture perfect to a point where they're trying, at least in my understanding, to sculpt the form or to sculpt perfection. And we end up in other time periods where people had different philosophies and different understandings of art, different aesthetic values, and are trying to paint reality as it is, trying to represent the world as they see it. And then other people are trying to, we think about modern art, trying to engender a reaction and those sorts of things. So there's all sorts of different approaches to art, subject matter and methodological, that are all informed and run on the fuel of your worldview or your philosophy.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I don't want to get too off topic here. I could go on and on about aesthetics, but I did want to ask Andrew about a few of the portraits that he has up on the website. And one is the Westminster Assembly poster. That's got to be one of my favorites. Well, and it's hanging in my office, is probably why. But where did you find that? And I think you mentioned to me earlier this year that you touched it up a little bit. So where did you find that, and what exactly did you do?
Okay. This is an actual painting that's in the collection at Westminster Palace in the UK. And in order to reproduce this, I had to basically pay them a lot of money.
Sure.
No, but you know, I had to you have to get permission from them, and in order to do that, you have to pay them a sum of money. Anyway, I was able to get enough pre-orders to cover all that, but the painting itself is a little bit run down. It's faded. It's cracked a good bit. For instance, I think David Dixon at Blue Banner Productions in Scotland had reproduced it in the early 90s, and it was pretty much an exact replica of what the painting looks like today. And I had purchased one of those prints for $150 on eBay. Mm-hmm. That's what they go for, at least until I made this print. If you wanted to get one of those old ones, you had to shell out about $150. Yeah. And so when I got the transparency from them and had it scanned in, they ran it through a digital program called ICE, and it corrects all the cracks in the painting and adjusts the colors to what they were more like originally. So it really makes it pop, makes it a lot more vibrant, and gives you a more accurate representation of the original painting than the one that still exists today that's quite aged. Mm. That was a really fun project. It was something that I'd wanted to do for quite some time. And it has been one of the most popular items on the site. The most everything on the website, I print on demand. So, you know, there's 250 prints. I can't keep a stock of all of those things, you know, and, you know, I don't have enough room as it is, you know, where would I put my books? But, but the two items, the two posters, the Synod of Dort poster and the Westminster Assembly of Divines poster, I had those printed. I had like 1,000 posters made, and they're 24-inch by 36-inch posters. And so they're 2 feet by 3 feet, mm-hmm. which is a standard size. So it's easy to get frames for them. But, so those I have a limited stock of, but am able to, you know, I have enough left. I should be able to have some for quite a while, but, I'm getting ready, Lord willing, by the end of the summer to make a third poster, which will also be in color. And that's, J.R. Lorimer's Ordination of Elders in the Scottish Church, which is
cool.
Yeah, it's a like the Banner of Truth has used it for a book cover or two in the past, but it's a really cool painting that shows you know, just like its title, a bunch of elders being ordained in an old Scottish church. And I've received a lot of requests for that one over the years, and have always been told by the National Portrait Gallery in Scotland that they're not giving permission for anyone to reproduce it. Mm. And so I would check back with them every year or so. And finally, just a few months ago, I checked with them and they said that they would give me permission now. Wow. So I'm working on getting my application together and getting it into them. And so that would be a lot of fun to get that one done. That's one that I've wanted to do for 4 or 5 years now. And a lot of people have wanted to have that. So that'd be cool.
Yeah. Speaking of the Westminster Assembly, the assertion of liberty of conscience by the independence of the Westminster Assembly, number 49, you've included this really nice printed guide so you can see who each of these people are. Number 49, mm-hmm. off in the top right corner, is a well-known figure named John Owen. Can you explain his appearance in this scene?
Certainly. Now, this painting is, in a sense, a work of fiction. Okay, it's not. Of course, they didn't have cameras and all that. This is an artist going back after the assembly and recreating a scene, and doing it from using. This is a master artist. He's using existing portraits of the individuals, so that the portraits are all accurate. And he went to the room, of course, and saw all that, but. There are a couple of folks he stuck in there, and we don't know if these folks were really at the assembly or not. And of course even the scene itself, the assertion of liberty of conscience by the independents. So the subject matter for this painting is in favor of the independents. So it just, you know, is it, when I had this painting done, I don't know if you are familiar with Roland Ward?
A little bit.
He's an Australian minister. He's written several books for PNR, but he's usually at the OPC General Assembly every year. Anyway, he did some research for me and wrote actually a little bit of history behind the painting that's fascinating. And there's a certain amount of irony that this is the only painting that we have of the assembly, but it's, you know, it's it was commissioned by an independent, of course, someone who didn't get their way in the assembly, and it was painted by someone who wasn't friendly to the Reformed tradition either. So, in God's providence, that's how it comes to us. So, there's a little bit of irony there.
Yeah, definitely.
So everybody looks mad in the painting.
Yeah, pretty much. They're all angry. No.
So you just said this is the only picture, or I would say, I don't know if this is proper, but like action shot of the Westminster Assembly.
Yeah, it's a candid.
Wow. Yeah.
Yes, it's the only thing that we have. It's been produced in a couple of ways over the years. You guys know Chad Van Dixhorn?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He has in his, it's either his or he's, I'm trying to remember if it's David Lockman's or if it's Chad's actual, but it's the painting, but it's a black and white engraving of it and a much larger format that's framed, that somebody did at some point in time. I have no idea of the history behind that, but I think I saw it at David Lockman's house, near Glenside.
Wonderful.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is all that we really have as far as any kind of memorabilia or any images of the assembly. This is what we get. So we have the standards that come to us. And, of course, all the work that Chad Van Dixhorn has been doing, republishing the minutes. I think that's a really cool project. I'm looking forward to that coming out. I mean, they're going to be really expensive to buy, but it'll be really interesting to read the minutes of the assembly and look at all the other work they did during the time they were meeting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also wanted to ask you, do you have a portrait or a shot of Francis Turretin?
I don't. I haven't been able to. It's not because I don't want one. Of course, I'd love to have Turretin on there. I have a growing list of different figures from Reformed history that I'd love to have a portrait of, but haven't been able to locate one. That is a significant quality to reproduce.
Right. So you seek out ones that you can gain the quality from, as opposed to just finding them randomly or.
Like exactly. On the internet. So, you can find all kinds of images online, of course, but, getting them at enough resolution to be able to make a really good 11x14 portrait is difficult. You think about the size of that. You'd need an 8 to 10 meg file at least to make a good solid portrait. So, what I use the most is trying to find originals and scanning them at a high quality, or something that's been reproduced in a book, but that is very clear and good quality, or old engravings. I found like the original print for the Synod of Dort poster. I got it on eBay from somebody in the Netherlands. It's just a really old antique print. And so that's how I get most of my stuff.
Hmm.
Well, now, Andrew, you do a lot of online work in general. One of the other things you do is you help edit the OPC website. Is that correct?
Yeah. And actually, before we move off of Reformation Art real quick, okay. I get a lot of requests from people to add things to the website, or people say, why don't you have this? Why don't you have that? And partly it's because it's my website, and I put up the things that I want. Cam and I were joking about this earlier, but Reformation art isn't something that I really make money on. The prints that are bought pay to keep the store up and all that kind of stuff. Occasionally I'll get a big order and I may make a little bit of money, but for the most part, it's not an income. And You know, like I got a guy email me once. He was upset that I had portraits of Van Til on there, but not portraits of Gordon Clark.
Right.
And I just told him, look, it's my website, and I like Van Til, and I don't like Clark, and so that's how it is. This isn't a democracy. If a bunch of people vote to put a print on my website, that I have to put it up there.
Right.
So, but the other thing is that I don't have any images of Jesus on there, which some people find very interesting. I added a section last year of antique Bible engravings. I thought that, well, that's cool. And, you know, something that people might be able to use or like to have, but I won't have any engravings on there that have any pictures of Jesus. Because of my use of the second commandment. And so, it is ironic that the only site that's developed to reproducing artwork for the Reformed tradition is run by an iconoclast. I think that's the best way for it to be, though, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so you do some work elsewhere. You do work on a lot of online work for different websites, but one is the OPC website. Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on? Because you think OPC and you don't think online.
That's the stereotype, right? To be frank, you know, the PCA is a young hipster denomination.
They're talking
all the
about that.
Have the iPhones and the OPC is kind of stuck in the mud. A bunch.
You know,
of
what's funny about that though? Everything we're mostly OPC guys. Here at Reform Forum, at least the people that are involved day in and day out. And I mean, we're entirely internet. We got an iPhone app coming out and all this other stuff. So I guess we're just breaking through the mold. And we have a guy online. We have an OPC guy who works on an OPC website. What is this?
It's a strange, it's a brave new paradigm.
Strange species of individual. So what do you do? What do you do on the OPC website? For those who don't know, it's OPC.org.
Yeah. OPC.org. It's really cool because the OPC has by far the best website of any NAPARC denomination. There's NAPARC. Referring to North American Presbyterian Reformed Churches, so PCA, OPC, the RPCNA, Bible Presbyterians, others, ARP. That's because it's a priority for our denomination. The Christian Education Committee, of course, chaired by Daniel Unger, oversees the Subcommittee on Internet Ministries. And the Subcommittee on Internet Ministries, the SIM, runs the website. And I'm an employee of the SIM. I'm not an actual committee member. I'm an employee.
Okay.
And so I help to do different things on the website, come up with ideas. A few of the things that I've done are I put all the online ordering on the website. So before you had to send an email saying, I want these things. And, so I added online ordering for all the materials. I put all the OPC, I had all the minutes of the General Assembly scanned and into PDF files, and then I put them all onto CD for John Meather and the Committee for the Historian, so that all the minutes back to 1936 are available on CD. Before then, there may have been 15, 20 sets in existence. So they were really hard to come by. So now they're available. But I did the online ordering. I created the audio sermons webpage, which links to every OPC congregation that has their sermons online.
I've been using that a lot lately.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I did the initial work on all that. Andrew Duggan, an elder up in the up in Pennsylvania somewhere, I did the database work on that. He's a real genius on that. He's a programmer. I keep that up, but it doesn't require a lot of maintenance. And I'm the editor of the feature article, which is the, when you pull up OPC.org, it's the first thing that pops up there. And that's a unique article that doesn't, that the content there doesn't appear anywhere else. And I so I'll get people to write things from time to time. Right now, there's a piece on the Diaconal Summit by Pat Clausen, who I do a lot of work with because she's Danny Olinger's secretary. So we work together a lot for these things.
And her husband's one of my board members.
That's right. Yeah, Doug. Great guy. Set up the donation site to for people to donate online to the OP. And I'm the other thing I do is I send out the OPC email newsletter. Did you know that such a thing exists?
I did not. Tell us more.
Okay. Well, I started it a while back. Basically, once or twice a month, I will take all the new content on the website. So the new feature article, new Horizons article, new Ordained Servant article, whatever new news items, Q&As, book reviews, all those things. And I put them into a newsletter using Constant Contact. Mm-hmm. And then I send it out to our list of subscribers. And so on the front of the OPC website, on the left-hand column, there's a link that says join our email list. Okay. And it, if you want to get that, that's where it comes to. Occasionally, you know, if I get busy or something, I might not send one out for a couple months, but that list is growing and growing. I think right now we may have about 1,500 people or so that receive that email. So that's cool.
Yeah, amazing.
Now, are you working on the OPC Twitter account?
Not yet. We're gonna give Mr. Galbraith a little Twitter device. no plans for that in the near future. Now, one thing that I am working on that'll be done this week, and you'll be the first to hear about it because it'll be announced at GA next week, is that I'm putting all the Presbyterian Guardian issues on the website.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
That was before the days of New Horizons, right?
Yeah, that's right. Before the clouds parted and the sun shone through.
before you mentioned that, I want to mention twitter.com/OPC is taken, and it says Naturanus OPC für Ihre Gesundheit. www.royalplus.edu, whatever that means. So we'll have to find another one.
That's right. Oh, well, that's too bad. This is a project for the Historians Committee, again, working with John Meather on that, and they had them all scanned, and I've aggregated them all together into a PDF portfolio. It's a new PDF format, and it's 1 gigabyte of data, so you'll be able to download it as one file, but that'll take quite a while. But then you can also access individual issues.
Sure.
So we should have that done by the end of the week, and it'll be up. It'll be announced at GA.
Now, are you going to work on scanning old issues of Eternity Magazine in?
I have a.
Do you have the famous issue?
I do. I have a copy of that advertisement.
Okay. Would you give a little background story? Because this is, you know, one of my favorite people to talk to in the OPC is Reverend Don Duff. And he's the stated clerk currently, because he's retiring. But but he's got all the stories about OPC history. And he'll tell you these crazy things. But there's a really funny story about an advertisement that the OPC ran in Eternity Magazine. So, Andrew, why don't you explain what this was? Well, I've never seen it. I couldn't find it. I couldn't find it online or anything. But to know that you have a copy now makes me really curious.
Yeah, it's packed up. A buddy of mine in California found it by – he found a library that had a microfiche of the edition and made a print of it. So,
now, Eternity Magazine was just a general – Christian magazine. It wasn't the OPC's thing, correct?
No, it wasn't the OPC's thing. It was an advertisement the Home Missions Committee took out for church planning, and it featured this young, busty lady in workout clothes, and she was leaning back on, I think it's a workout bench or something, with one leg up, and the caption was, "She wants it all." And
what?
I'm not making this up.
This is an OPC ad.
She yeah. wants it all, and then it explains about the OPC's outreach to yuppies. and it explains what a yuppie is and how we're reaching out to yuppies. And I, and apparently it was a big controversy at GA, and I think it resulted in you know, a change in leadership or something at that point of the of the Home Missions Committee. I think it was one of the key characters involved, I think, was Lewis Ruff.
I think that's correct. Yeah,
that was kind of part of his administration. So we got that going for us, which is nice.
That is bringing out the Caddyshack.
The most edgy. That's the most edgy advertising story I've heard, and it's from the heart of the OPC. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh yeah, she wants it all.
She wants it all. Well, anyway, that's amazing. So opc.org, all sorts of great stuff there. I mean, even if you just want an electronic copy of the Confession of Faith and the Catechisms, that's all on there in two forms. One, just HTML text. You can do a Control F, a find on, or you can read it, copy and paste. But you can. They also have the PDF versions of the typeset ones that you can also buy hardback copies of. So I find those very helpful. The Book of Church Order is also on there, searchable Bible. But probably the most useful feature of opc.org for me is the Trinity Hymnal. If you happen to be in a church that still uses the blue Trinity Hymnal, as Jonathan and my church do, you can actually go online and search the hymnal. You can also listen to the music. They have MIDI files for all the music in the hymnal. It's just incredibly handy. If you're looking for a phrase, or you're looking for hymn, if you can't sight read and can't play the piano, and you're a pastor or a licentiate, and you're putting together a worship service, and you're trying to think, well, what hymn is this? What does this sound like? Would this be a good one to open up with after the call of worship? Well, if you go to opc.org/hymnal.html, that's where you can find all this stuff. There's just a wealth of information and a wealth of tools at opc.org. So it's very impressive. So thank you for your work on that, Andrew, and thank you to everyone else who works on it too, because I know there are many.
But there are many. I'm just one small wheel in the big machine. There's a lot of people that work on the website and that do a lot more work than I do. So I'll give you a bit of an Easter egg, if you want. If you go to the find a local congregation.
You've got all the Google Maps and stuff on there now.
You have the Google Maps there. Under the keyword search, just type in one word, all churches. And what that'll do is it'll pull up a Google map.
I've always wondered about doing that, and that's how you do that. Oh, that's clever. Yeah.
So what happens?
Yeah, you get all of them, and normally you have to do it state by state. But if you just search for all churches as one word, they all come up. So you see our church here at Grace OPC in Alaska, all the way down to Redeemer OPC. In Hawaii, Pearl City, Hawaii.
And over to Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, yep. Iglesia Presbiteriana Reformada del Caribe OPC. That one's right.
Easy for you to say.
Puerto Ricense. That's cool. Awesome. So that's clever. So that's a tip for you, a little take home for the listener. But while we have you on, Andrew, why don't you tell us a little bit about the church plant in Houston? If we have any listeners in Houston, Texas, is there good news for an OPC-minded person in Houston?
Oh, there's great news. Basically, I grew up in this area. I grew up in San Antonio, South Texas, my whole life. And so it's always kind of been in the back of my mind, why don't we have a bigger presence in Houston? Adam York is our pastor in Kingwood, Texas. It's Northeast Houston. He's been working hard, laboring there for I don't know how long now, maybe eight to 10 years, and doing a great job there. But that's one church in an area with 4 million people.
Right.
Mm.
And he has no fellowship out there. The nearest church is either going to be, Austin, which is about 2.5-3 hours away. So he's pretty isolated. And I've always thought in the back of my mind, you know, we need more churches in Houston. We have a growing group of churches in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex primarily due to the work of our regional home missionary, Gary Davenport, who does a great job. But we don't really have any resources in South Texas to do all that. So, when it became clear to me that my time in Amarillo was coming to a close, and looking around at other opportunities out there, there are not a lot of open pulpits available at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, maybe the Lord is really giving me an opportunity here to plant a church in Houston. And so started thinking about that, praying about it, talking to our home missions committee about it. And the Lord's been opening doors to do that. Just yesterday, we got our website online, which is HoustonReformed.org. And it's got some contact information in there. But basically, I'm going to be driving out there to meet with folks, to gather interested people so that we can start a church. I'm targeting right now primarily Northwest Houston, I-10, 290 corridors, from Katy to Cypress, especially Cypress. But my personal goal would be to see several churches planted over the next few years around Houston. So I'm wanting to get any contacts in any part of Houston. Anyone who's interested in planting a Reformed confessional church.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're at right now. And as soon as possible, my goal is to get stuff going there, move out there, become a mission work, and never look back.
So if somebody wants to become involved in this church, or if they know somebody that might want to, how can they get a hold of you, Andrew?
Okay.
Visit the website, of course, HoustonReformed.org, but do you have an email that you wouldn't mind giving out or something else?
No, that's fine. The website, definitely. Phone number, we set up a Houston local number, which is 832-37-TRUTH or 832-378-7884. And my email address is moody@HoustonReformed.org. That's M-O-O-D-Y.
That's not the counselor's. That's not like the counselor's email address, the church.
That's right.
Moody.
You got this problem. Moody. Email moody@mychurch.com. I'll straighten you out. One of those. Now, I do want to say we do get some significant traffic from Texas on reformforum.org, and the number two city in Texas for traffic to reformforum.org is Houston, number three, Amarillo. But then we've got some other cities nearby, you know, Friendswood, Pasadena, Deer Park, Porter, Cypress, as you said. So there's interest, at least in Reformed theology there. So please, if you're at all even vaguely interested or know somebody that might be, get in touch with Andrew so he can talk to you, at least tell you what they're up to.
Definitely.
Mm.
Give me a shout.
And not on Twitter yet. Do you have a Twitter account, Andrew?
I don't yet. Although one of my focuses with this church plant, so, you know, this is not your typical church planting situation. Normally in the OPC, you know, we get contacts from people saying, you know, we have 8 or 10 families here. We want to plant a church. Please help us. This is not that kind of situation. This is my saying, we have one church in a city of 4 million people. We need more churches.
Right.
Yeah. There are people that need to be reached. And so it's more of me just saying, Lord, here I am, you know, send me the people. Let's, you know, and so I'm just trying to reach people, and I'm trying to use social networking to do that.
Mm.
Created a Facebook page, just so it can be more visible, online. And I think before long, I will create a Twitter account. Even though I'm not a huge Twitter fan, that's where the people are.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, you know, where's the marketplace today? I mean, where do we go to engage people? Where do we go to talk to people? People don't talk to their neighbors in their front yard anymore. They go inside and they go online. And so we have to, in my opinion, to reach people, we've got to be online too, to make contacts with them so we can meet them in real life.
Well, you're not going to be accepting virtual members to this church, are you?
Well, only if they will tithe virtually.
All right. Well, with that, I think we can bring this one to an end. But that's interesting. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us and just talking about all sorts of things. You're an interesting, You're an interesting cat. And thanks for coming on. And again, everyone, you can visit reformationart.com. And also HoustonReform.org and, of course, OPC.org, three websites that a Reformed person, especially one in Texas, would be interested in. And so visit those online or contact Andrew, and maybe you can get set up and you can visit him at a new church in Houston, Texas. Well, thanks to you as well, Jonathan. And I want to mention links to Westminster's stuff as well. Jonathan's hard at work. iTunes U is still pumping out a lot of Reformed content. Westminster keeps putting up all sorts of new lectures and classes, so visit them at iTunes U in the iTunes Music Store, as well as Facebook.com/Westminster Online and YouTube.com/Westminster Online. And, of course, Reformed Forum is available at reformedforum.org. There you can find links to all of our programs, including all of our other websites, and see what we're up to. Thank you so much for listening to the Reformed Media Review, and until next time, tola lege, that is, pick up and read.